Here we are, back together again after a brief hiatus in July. Though it feels like Pat left a while ago, the actual start of his six-month sabbatical was this past Monday, following his annual vacation in July. And on Monday, I joined you again to walk through this in-between period together. I'm honored to make this journey together. I have high hopes for our time. I'm also aware of the limitations as we go from 1.5 ministers to 0.5 minister during this period. Thankfully, the job description does not include getting in a box and letting the great Houdini saw me in half. But back to high hopes. I'm convinced and have seen evidence that together, through our coordinated efforts, we can thrive nonetheless. Sitting in the monthly program council meeting on Wednesday evening was evidence and reminder that good ideas, passionate commitments, and devoted leadership are alive and well in this place. And might I add, this service has been evidence of those things as well, gifts and talents and commitments. As you heard during the welcome, we are focusing on the 7 principles of Unitarian Universalism during the sabbatical. You all began this work last month as you focused on the first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Today marks the beginning of our focus on the second principle, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. We begin our look at this principle this morning very close to home, within our own fellowship, families, and communities. Next week, when my wife Maria preaches, we'll begin expanding our perspective outward, further and further with each topic this month. So greetings. Glad we are here together. Glad you are in this place this morning. Today, our specific focus is on pastoral care, or more simply, care for one another. This is something that you have been doing for a long time. Many of you have been involved in pastoral care through the years and have sustained this work alongside ministers, as well as during periods of ministerial transition. And since I have arrived in your midst, to work among you, I've seen many beautiful examples of care. You have gathered around a family who lost an adult child. You have cared for ones who've had major surgeries and gotten new joints. You have offered love and support to spouses and children and family of longtime members who have died these last months. And importantly, you have not walked away from them once the memorial service was done. You keep loving them and checking in on them and taking them to dinner or lunch. You continue to offer care to those who are struggling with terminal illnesses where cure is no longer a possibility. These are beautiful things. These are vital things. These are foundational things in the life of our fellowship. So what's new? If we're already doing this, why are we kicking off an updated pastoral care program today? Well, we do this for a number of reasons. We do this as an intentional act at the beginning of this sabbatical period, and we declare that caring for one another well is one of the things that matters most to us. We do this out of practical need. We want to continue and even extend care while Pat is away. We do this because caring for each other well is a key part of what it means to be community. Effectively, we are organizing and structuring our pastoral care efforts. Starting in August, we have pastoral care volunteers who are serving in pairs as care coordinators for a month at a time. Outside of a crisis situation, care coordinators are the main point of contact for persons in need, and they serve as liaisons with others who have volunteered to help. I'd like to say a word of thanks to all of you who have committed to being care coordinators, and a special word of thanks to Mary Margaret Dragoon and Barbara Gill, who are brave enough to take on this very first month. Another key part of the program is training. Each month, our care coordinators and other interested pastoral caregivers come together to learn and engage in dialogue about what caring for one another well looks like. Training covers topics like confidentiality, hospital visits, active listening, and grief. Our care coordinators, then trained in compassionate listening, strive to offer a simple presence of hope on behalf of the fellowship. On your way in this morning, you may have seen the pastoral care table. There you can learn more about this new program, which will be in the fellowship hall after the service. Pick up a brochure with more detailed information, and importantly, you can sign up to help as needed in offering care to GOOF members and friends. Many of you have already done this and are supporting the needs you feel comfortable meeting, providing meals, rides, or other short-term services. And I hope more of you will sign up after the service today. We're calling this group of responders our Caring Response Team. And now that I've shared a few details about the program with you, I want to focus the rest of our time together on what we actually mean by care and why it matters. Regardless of whether you're officially part of the pastoral care team or not, the care that takes place in the fellowship is always bigger and hopefully far more pervasive than just what a few of us can do. We all play a part in promoting the beloved community we seek to establish here and beyond these walls. So what do we mean by the word care? If we listen closely, we'll find the word sprinkled throughout our conversations. See you later, take care. What do you want for dinner? I don't care. Don't worry, I'll take care of that. We could go on and on. I'm sure you can think of more. But today we're talking about a more particular kind of care connected to the word's origin, kara, meaning to lament, to mourn, to cry out with, to participate in suffering. Care, first and foremost, is to be with the person in need and from there to cry out with them. Henri Nouwen writes, "It's a mourning, a lamenting, a being with those who suffer and are in pain. Care and cure are not the same things. We must pull these terms apart and focus on care, what it means to be with others. Care is a side-by-side relationship, not a hierarchical one. In fact, we seek to avoid hierarchy in care, where one is powerful and the other is powerless, or where one is strong and the other is weak, because as Nouwen cautions, it does not take much until you are in the middle of a violent relationship. When someone shares their pain with us, it's natural to want to relieve it, to say or do something to make it better, or to carry the pain for them so they can have a break. However, the journey towards healing, transformation, and wholeness requires that we walk through it. If we short-circuit our pain, push it down, and repress it, eventually it will find its way back out of us, not always in the healthiest of ways. This is difficult work, and it's no wonder that we avoid it. When tragedy, crisis, or loss occurs, often we come face to face with our own mortality, our own finiteness, and this stirs up pain and fear within ourselves. We as caregivers have to do the hard work of acknowledging our own pain, lest it drives us unconsciously and hijacks our attempts to care for others. So what does care look like? Well, consolation is at least part of what we offer one another in care. But rather than removing pain or distracting from pain, consolation is actually creating or mobilizing sadness, making that sadness available and even deepening sadness to where it can be shared. Consolation is creating a place where sadness and pain can exist, be looked at, and can be made available so that the person can say, "Yes, I am sad." In this process, I do not move from pain to no pain, but rather I move from pain to shared pain. Because the truth is, some things in life cannot be fixed. They can only be carried. Another image for the work of care is holding space for someone. Earlier this summer, I shared an article with the newly forming pastoral care team about this idea. In it, the author describes the concept of holding space, being willing to walk alongside another person on whatever journey they are on without judging, making them feel inadequate, trying to fix them, or trying to impact the outcome. When we hold space, we open our hearts, offer unconditional support, and let go of judgment and control. To truly support people in their own growth, transformation, and grief, we can't do it by taking their power away, shaming them, or overwhelming them. We need to stand alongside them so they can make their own choices, feel unconditional love and support, and even feel safe when they make mistakes. Letting go of our desire to fix people and hold space for them instead is both difficult and simple. It's difficult in that we have to resist the urges within ourselves, long-developed expectations that we are supposed to fix problems and avoid difficult emotions. It's simple in that we let go of our to-do list and take on the task of deep listening. Those of you who participate in covenant circles have been practicing deep listening for quite some time now. We're so used to responding to one another that listening without crosstalk is a skill we have to learn and practice, for which we have to hold one another accountable. Yet what a gift it is to listen without having to have an answer and response to make things better. We are able to hear more deeply what the person is saying, and in so doing, give them a chance to listen to their own wisdom. Parker Palmer, whose work is the foundation for covenant circles, writes about his own experience of receiving care when he was depressed. Many friends came to visit him and tried to comfort him. As he reflects on this several years later, Palmer concludes that our fix-it syndrome is actually avoidance and denial. He writes, "One of the hardest things we must do sometimes is to be present to another person's pain without trying to fix it, to simply stand respectfully at the edge of that person's mystery and misery. Standing there, we feel useless and powerless, and the unconscious need is to reassure ourselves that we are not like the soul before us." In other words, our tendency in the face of suffering is to wonder, could this happen to me? Having worked in the hospital setting for a while, I see this question all the time. I've even asked it myself. And I also see the discomfort of it. Hospital personnel will sometimes explain or declare why a trauma or illness was avoidable so that they don't have to face the fear that it could be me in the bed. Parker Palmer goes on and tells the story of one of his friends that came by to visit him during his depression nearly every day. With his permission, Palmer's friend Bill stopped by each afternoon, sat him down in a chair, knelt down in front of him, removed his socks and shoes, and for half an hour simply massaged his feet. Palmer writes, "He found the one place in my body where I could experience feeling and feel somewhat reconnected to the human race." I happen to know of a similar story in our fellowship. A beloved member and friend is dying of cancer, and she finds great comfort in her shaman, another goof member who stops by to rub her feet each week. He cannot take her pain away. He can and does acknowledge it as he bends to rub her feet. Obviously, I'm not suggesting that we all start going to people's homes and rubbing their feet when they are struggling. It's very important to remember that this was done with permission in both cases. I am saying that the posture of kneeling, of journeying with, of holding space and of caring for others is what we are seeking. So what does pastoral care have to do with justice? Sometimes when you come up with a sermon title before you've written the sermon, you bite off more than you can chew. That said, I do think pastoral care and justice are deeply related because the care is the foundation for all of our relationships, including how we engage in social justice. I think Nouwen is right about the imbalance of power and the risk of violence when that is the case. And, like pastoral care, we need to pay attention to our motivations regarding social justice. Sympathy, responsibility, and mutuality are three common motivations. We struggle with some of the same issues in social justice that we do in pastoral care. We want to fix things for people so that we can feel better about the world and especially ourselves. And for real change to take place, we need mutuality. We need to listen deeply. We need to walk with. Care is a foundation for social justice. Our best pastoral care efforts and our best social justice efforts come from a place of mutuality, of knowing that we cannot fix or need not fix the struggles that people are facing in our beloved community. Rather, we give people permission to trust their own intuition and wisdom. We make sure they know they are not alone. We hold space for the depth and complexity of the emotions they are feeling. This, I think, is mutuality. This, I think, is good pastoral care. This, I think, caring for one another well in the midst of community, in the midst of our most intimate relationships, is the foundation for mutual care that extends outward into the world. If we can practice for caring for one another when we are hurting and vulnerable, leaving room for one another to be whole, I think we practice caring for the world. Today we celebrate the good work, the good care that has been here from the very first days. Today we celebrate the efforts of our pastoral care leaders who keep pressing us to take care of one another well. Today we celebrate the chance to expand and extend care within and beyond this fellowship. Together we strive to create a nurturing climate of love and compassion, rooted in the Unitarian Universalist principle of justice, equity, and compassion in human relations.